Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Coming off a bye week, 5 wins in a row for your hometown Minnesota Vikings. Big game yesterday against the Washington Redskins. Really important win to come off a bye week. Joining us now, voice of the Vikings, the legendary, one and only host of 9 to Noon on KFAN, Paul Allen.
What's that funky number your producer just unveiled?
That would be the Barquet's Too Hot to Stop.
Damn, good, that was nice.
Good tie-in with the Vikings right now.
Yeah.
Got a hot team, too hot to stop.
Yeah, ain't no doubt. Being from Washington, D.C., I got a chance to go back to my proverbial neck of the woods, where I grew up in southeast Washington, D.C., to music by bands like the Barquets and Tower of Power and Sly and the Family Stone.
Good stuff.
Daryl Hall and John Oates, man. So I know funk, and that was
one of my. I love your show. I listen to your show all the time. One of my favorite aspects of your show, though, is your bumper music.
I appreciate you.
You have a fantastic selection of bumper music.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
I know there's no way to duplicate yesterday over and over with every game, but man,
your hair looks really good right now.
Thank you, sir.
Did it cut or something?
Since the last time you saw me, I did.
You look spectacular.
The NFL could do itself some favors if every single game was like half as much fun it was to watch. Apart from the Vikings win, that was just a fun game to watch yesterday.
Yeah,
it was just thrilling from beginning to end.
It had some twists and some turns we have not experienced this season. The explosiveness of the Vikings offense in the first half was a focal point out of the off week. The two things that I heard a lot around practice last week up to the Washington game was we have to start more quickly. We have to throw the ball down the field and establish a deep passing game. And when we get inside the 20, which in the business we call the red zone, we have to stop shooting ourselves in the proverbial foot. Now, the good news is the field goal kicker, Kai Forbath, into the game was 21 of 22, and he had hit 15 consecutive, including 10 for 10 the last two games. The bad side of that is they're getting close to scoring touchdowns, but not scoring them. So they got inside the 20 yesterday 5 times. They scored 5 touchdowns. And to complement that beautifully, the kicker hit a 53-yard field goal to make it 38-30 that they really, really needed badly.
Isn't he perfect on 50-plus-yard field goals this season?
He's 5 for 5, which makes from 51, 52, 53, and 53.
How important do you think was that opening drive, given what happened during throughout the rest of the game, to sort of setting the stage?
Excellent point, because Washington is well respected as one of the better teams in the NFL for marching down the field on the very first possession and getting points. In fact, they had 40 points in the first quarter into the game, which was 10th in the NFL. So, no matter how good your defense is, Washington, coached by a very good offensive coach, Jay Gruden, will find a way to get down the field and get points. Now, how do you respond? Because if they score and you don't, they score again, then you're in the belly of the beast right out of the gate. So the fact that Case Keenum, Case Keenum now has 6 victories. It was a week where Teddy Bridgewater returned. There was a lot of hoopla and pomp and circumstance with that. And I just quietly kind of wondered how Case would react to that, and how much of it was on his mind during the course of the game. And again, hearing all week the offensive coordinator and the head coach implore the young man to throw the ball down the field. You've got to try to get down the field to loosen these defenses. Then on that first possession, 51 yards, right on one of the best corners in the NFL, Josh Norman, it was extremely important.
Coming off the bye week, we all remember last year, last season, 5-0, and then that epic collapse after the bye week.
I heard that a lot last week, and it bugged me. And you know why it bugged me? Because the circumstances are ridiculous.
They're very different.
Yeah, it was just very cliche for people to bring that up last year, simply because past performances are not indicative of future results. The offensive line this year is exponentially better than last year. And, granted, the guy is a very close friend of mine, and I hated when it happened. but offensive coordinator Norv Turner quit the team about this time last year, which was a major season-long lasting distraction. So I heard that a fair amount last week, and I was like, it just didn't resonate at all.
Well, that was going to be my question. Does that resonate with the players? A lot of people were talking about it, but did you get any sense from the players of any increased pressure?
That's a completely different bit. It's a completely different bit, man. I mean, you know, the quarterback's different. The running situation's different. The offensive line is top 10 in the NFL. You know, the general manager for this team, Rick Spielman, is on a major, major role right now. You know, first of all, I mean, with all due respect to Sam Bradford, because he's fantastic when he's healthy, but, you know, there could have been a time before that knee situation, they gave him like a $120 million contract. Then you got just an awful situation with the knee, and the money's already spent, and they didn't do that. He also drafted Dalvin Cook. Granted, he's hurt, but that looks like a win.
Yeah.
Drafted Pat Elflein, who's fantastic at center. Paid a lot of money for Riley Reiff in free agency to play left tackle. He hasn't given up a sack this season. Also, and one thing about which I would be prideful if I ran this team is sometimes to whom much is given, much is expected. But it doesn't always work that way in pro sports. To wit, they gave Adam Thielen, Harrison Smith, Xavier Rhodes, Everson Griffin, and Linval Joseph all massive pay raises. And all of those guys are better than they were before they got that money. And it doesn't always go that way. So this general manager, Rick Spielman, has done a terrific job shaping this team.
A lot of chatter about Teddy Bridgewater, of course, as expected. I'm personally of the opinion, though, you know, if they decide to not put Teddy Bridgewater in at all, I'm okay with that.
Right.
Case Keenum is playing very well. He's got this team moving the ball. I would not have expected 38-point outputs from this Vikings team against the Washington Redskins on the road at any time over the course of the season, even with Sam Bradford in there. That is not the offense that I've gotten used to as a Vikings fan.
Right.
And to watch this offense move, to look at Case Keenum play, he's not great. I mean, there's still some passes that where I hold my breath, especially the long ones, the deep passes. I'm holding my breath while they're in there. They got a little air under them.
Yeah.
But all in all, the team's winning. Why would you rock this boat right now?
I think you laid it out perfectly, and I don't see any way they do. Now, like during the bye with the paralysis by overanalysis, I mean, we talked about and thought about everything. You know, and I kind of thought, all right, if Case comes out of the bye and this Bridgewater situation's really bugging him, and he lets it impact his play, and he feels disrespected, and he has an awful game, and we lose. Well, you know what? Teddy Bridgewater running out of the tunnel at U.S. Bank Stadium for a home game against the Rams, the place will be electric. So that might be a starting spot for him. But with the way Case has played this year and the way in a team game he's done a lot to kind of save this season, I'm very fond of Teddy Bridgewater. I'm in no rush to put him into a game.
Do you think having him on the sidelines dressed for that game, even though he didn't play, do you think that impacted the team yesterday?
No, not really. I think the week leading up to it did. Everybody, he's so kind, and he's just so popular within the team, and he's come so far in the 400-some-odd days since the devastating knee injury that I do believe that there's a certain facet that kind of took something that already is cohesive and tight and galvanized it that much more. But, you know, from an X's and O's standpoint, you know, we went a few weeks with Kyle Sloter as our backup quarterback.
Right.
And he's never taken a National Football League regular season snap. So if Keenum gets smacked in a game and has to miss a quarter and a half, and we had to use Kyle, I'm not exactly sure where it would have gone. Now your backup quarterback situation is quite accomplished.
Have you spent much time with Case personally? I mean, what kind of guy is he? And should he get more attention right now, given how well he's doing? Because I think people still sort of view him. I mean, I know that I look at it and kind of go, well, he's not quite the guy yet, but he's doing fantastic.
Well, Case is a very excitable guy. He also has a quiet, competitive arrogance to him that really, really impresses me. And I'll take you back a few weeks to when we were playing the Chicago Bears on Monday Night Football, and Sam Bradford had missed a string of games because of the knee situation. Sam's knee was feeling better. They practiced hard on Sam during the course of the week up to the game, and I watched all the practices, and, you know, I watched Sam plant on his left leg and throw the ball and look like, hey, everything's good. Let's go with Sam. Well, then we played the game, and clearly things weren't well with Sam. During the course of that week, I kind of got the feel Case Keenum was looking at the situation going, what are we doing here? I mean, I'm winning games, I'm not getting the team beat, and this guy is not 100%. So we play the game against the Bears. Bradford's horrible. He comes out near halftime. Keenum comes in with his freaking hair on fire. I mean, he was 17 of 21. He was unbelievable in that game, just how fast he was playing. And I left the game just thinking that, you know, Case just spent a week wondering what is happening to my lot in life and why am I not playing? And he has a competitive arrogance to him that just, it's very impressive.
Should he get more attention, you think? Is it important at all at this point in time?
I mean, when you're 7-2 and you're in first place and you have the best shot to go to the Super Bowl that as you've had really since 2009, he's on a team with a bunch of guys who are contributing at an incredibly high level.
Yep.
You know, at 10:55 today on my radio show, I'm going to unfurl one of those super special sports talkers wondering which teams around the National Football League would Adam Thielen not be a number one receiver. So, I mean, you got Adam Thielen with a 166-1 yesterday. You know, he has at least 5 catches in every game this season. Only player in the NFL to do that. Stephon Diggs is a legitimate threat. The offensive line is a major talker. The defense probably, certainly is top 3 in the NFL. Might be the best overall. The offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur, in his first full year, I mean, the buttons he's pushing right now are spectacular. So, there a lot of players and scenarios with this team are praiseworthy,
yeah.
And I don't think you should single out the quarterback.
Oh, and I don't think the Vikings coaching staff gets enough credit for overcoming the loss of your starting quarterback, overcoming the loss of your starting running back, and still winning games. I mean, you look at a lot of other teams that have suffered similar injuries, and they are really struggling.
Well, we're in the belly of the beast now. I mean, we were yesterday because it was a road game against a 4-4 team in a very loud building with a very good quarterback. And, you know, the Vikings in certain patches of that game were killing Washington, and Case Keenum was absolutely toying with them. But it ended up being 38-30. Now we have the L.A. Rams here Sunday.
Tough team.
This is an unbelievably difficult challenge. That team is number one in the NFL in points differential. Their second-year quarterback, Jared Goff, just went for 355 and 3 touchdowns yesterday, probably the best game of his career. The running back, Todd Gurley, is an MVP candidate. Their head coach, Sean McVay, is 31 years old, and he is so dialed in offensively now. I just can't wait to dive into the coach's film of his offense this week to better get knowledge of the nuances. The McVay, Goff, Gurley, Sammy Watkins, Robert Woods offense versus this Zimmer defense at US Bank Stadium, this is one of the coolest matchups in the entire NFL the entire season.
Yeah, this is going to be a phenomenal.
Hey, but you know, the Lions are at the Bears. All right, the Lions just beat the Browns. Now, the Lions are going to win at Chicago because these Bears just ain't doing it right. So now, you know, we got to beat the Rams. Lions are going to win in Chicago. And then we're at Detroit on Thanksgiving in a short week. Mm-hmm. This is unbelievable how exciting this is right now.
And then after that, you're on the road against Atlanta. You're on the road against Carolina.
You think we're not?
It's a tough four-game stretch.
It's a tough four-game stretch.
And
then Star Wars comes out.
And then Star Wars comes out just after that.
Sammy Sansevier is going to have to watch the games with a nightlight. She's going to be scared.
Paul Allen.
I already do.
That all escalated quickly.
9 to noon. Yeah. KFAN, fantastic show.
Thank you, guys.
Choice in bumper music throughout the morning.
Barquets, though.
Really, really. I think you lead the Twin Cities in your bumper music.
Yeah, but Sam just put me to shame with that Barquets. Now, if she comes back with some Bootsy Collins, I'd rather be with you.
Yeah.
And you got your audience got paid.
We're learning from the best.
See ya. Bye, Sam.
Bye.
Coming up out of CBS is Minneapolis and Mayor-elect Fry ready for the Super Bowl. We'll get his thoughts. Plus, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce is suing Minneapolis over the $15 an hour minimum wage. We'll bring you all the details.
Your shot.
So Sam was just mentioning, welcome back to Justice and Drew here on Twin Cities News Talk. Somebody called and said there was an interview on Sunday Night Football with Joe Biden. That was the relevancy of the call. I know I was reading an article this morning where people keep speculating whether or not he's going to run in 2020. Does Biden get anybody excited for politics?
I think he's a likable guy.
Yeah, I would imagine that a lot of sort of rank and file Democrats would be. When you look at the potential field, like right now, like all the potential names, and there aren't that many.
No.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, if you're a really like a rank and file Democrat,
my mind is a blank.
Yeah, I would imagine that Joe Biden gets people excited. He's doing a he's doing a lot of the things one would expect someone to do if they were planning a run for president, right? He's out doing a tour. He's actually doing a tour. He's going to be here in Minneapolis. He's coming to like the Orpheum or something. Yeah, I know.
Like a one man band.
Does he play like 10 different instruments?
I don't know.
Is it a variety show?
I don't know. He's going to do skits with little, like Martin Short.
Little stand up, little piano crooning.
But no, he's coming to either the Pantages or the Orpheum. I don't remember which. Yeah, I have a friend who works for a promotions company out of Nashville, and she called me over the weekend, and she's like, "Hey, I'm because she's looking for advice on how to best market this." And she's like, "So you know about the Joe Biden show coming to the Pantages, right?" I was like, "No, I've not heard of this." She says, "Well, we haven't done a good job marketing it then."
Please tell me that's what it's called, the Joe Biden Show.
I don't know what it's
called. Oh, my gosh. If it's the Joe Biden Show, I'm all in.
I'd go.
Be in. Yeah, I'd go.
Just because I out of curiosity of what right. the Joe Biden Show would entail.
Yeah.
You know, that alone.
She was like, do you want tickets? I said, no.
You should have said yes.
No, but I don't.
Do you want to go to the lying. Joe Biden Show?
Cute.
Biden, to me, whenever he went on the attack, my perception was he was always too mean about it. And I know that sounds odd, but just his demeanor when he would go on the offensive, where Trump comes off as smarmy and sarcastic, Biden just always kind of came off as mean to me. I don't know.
He comes off as like judgmental dad that just makes you feel bad about yourself.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I don't want to go see the Joe Biden Show.
But yeah, no, I think if Joe Biden were to run for president, I think he would have right now I would have to say he would be the front runner for the nomination and probably a pretty formidable opponent for Trump.
In the absence of being able to come up with one other individual to run, I agree with you.
Right.
Because
I mean, that's the thing. You kind of have to look at where we are right now.
Put Al Franken in there? No, yeah, okay. I say Joe Biden, right? Elizabeth Warren? Yeah, I say Joe Biden. So.
Cory Booker?
I see him more as a VP than I do a P.
You don't have as much P potential as others. As a P.
That was odd.
That was really
that
odd.
That was really odd.
You don't really strike me as a P.
I'm disappointed that Sam had to take a phone call and missed that. I have to go back and listen to that on the iHeartRadio app there, Sam. All right. Out of CBS, the Super Bowl is 2.5 months away, and the question remains, is Minneapolis ready? This week, city officials are holding a reopening celebration to mark the end of most construction at the revamped Nicollet Mall. But now that people can walk down the mall again, it's easier to see the empty storefronts.
So excited.
Everybody's just been waiting with bated breath. Can't wait to walk back down the mall again.
I've been walking down all these other blocks in downtown. Now there's a new one I can walk down.
Additionally, crime in downtown continues to be the worst of any neighborhood in the city. Statistics for the latest month available, July, show there were 30 robberies, 18 aggravated assaults, and 4 rapes in that month alone.
Ouch.
Ouch.
That's not good.
Mayor-elect Jacob Fry is, however, promising a turnaround.
We will be ready for the Super Bowl, and that's not to say that we don't have a crime problem right now. We have seen about a 200% uptick in violent crime and specifically shootings. But over the next several months, we're going to be working obviously with the Minneapolis Police Department, with our new chief, Rondo, as well as other jurisdictions to ensure that we do have complete safety in the area of the Super Bowl.
Man, he is good at just saying a bunch of words.
Yeah.
That amount to just nothing.
Yeah, there was nothing.
He is the definition of empty calories.
And even like a lot of negativity in there too. I mean, he even spun, you know, he even spun it to the point where he's talking about the 200% uptick and made it sound like, whatever, you know, it's 200% uptick. We'll be working with people. We're going to talk to them.
We're going to work with all the people to make sure that the things don't happen.
Yeah,
that we don't want to happen. We're going to get the stakeholders involved. And make sure that everybody's invested on a equitable outcome.
I hope they're ready because it's coming regardless.
Yeah.
If we don't know by now, then Maybe we should have thought about that further.
They'll be ready.
Out of the Star Tribune, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce is taking the city of Minneapolis to court over the $15 minimum wage, saying the ordinance conflicts with state law. Boom. In a lawsuit filed in the Hennepin County District Court on Friday.
Also a little late on this, but okay.
the chamber asked the court to issue a temporary injunction, freezing the ordinance, and then a permanent injunction nullifying it. Reject. The state has set the minimum wage in Minnesota, and the city does not have the power to set a different minimum wage, according to Cam Winton, the chamber's director of labor and management policy. You think it was a matter of seeing if it got passed and then moving forward with it?
I think they wanted to wait to see who won all the elections before they decided to. They wanted to see if they could get enough council members in there to possibly reverse it. Through the council, and then when that didn't happen, then they decided, well, let's proceed with the lawsuit.
Were there phantom candidates that I was not aware of? Oh, Ginger didn't win. I guess we have to go file our lawsuit now.
They didn't want Ginger to win.
No, I know.
No, absolutely not.
That was the joke. In addition, the Minnesota Chamber, the lawsuit lists the Twin City Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Recruiting and Staffing Association, and Graco Inc. as co-plaintiffs. They also sued the city in 2016 after the city council passed the mandatory paid sick leave ordinance. In January, the Hennepin County judge said the city could move forward with the ordinance, but it could only apply to its employers based in the city. Minneapolis City Attorney Susan Siegel said the chamber's minimum wage lawsuit echoes its fight against the sick leave ordinance. They have raised the same failed arguments as they raised in their suit challenging the city's sick and safe time ordinance. She said in an email, "We will be vigorously defending against this suit."
Yeah, and it's I hate to say it, but it's probably going to go the same way.
Yeah,
I'm not very confident that the Chamber of Commerce. I mean, I'm glad they're fighting the fight. You know, they should have. Should have been more involved a lot earlier, especially when it comes to electing people to the city council. Now it's gotten to this point. Now they've passed these ordinances. They've passed the mandatory sick time. They've made a mandatory paid leave. They've passed the $15 hour minimum wage for the city of Minneapolis. So Chamber of Commerce, you guys are a little bit late to this fight. You should have been working to elect better candidates to the city council a long time ago.
The group 15 Now, which spearheaded the minimum wage campaign in Minneapolis, also pledged to fight the chamber's challenge. The chamber's lawsuit shows that big business will fight endlessly to defend keeping workers in poverty to protect profits, according to Ginger Jensen.
Oh, my God. She's such an idiot.
Right?
She's such an idiot. I mean, she really believes that's what big business exists to do, to keep people in poverty and to protect profits. Like, that's in the best interest of big business. Do you not think they realize that they need customers? And if all the workers are in poverty, then nobody's going to buy their product.
Well, and they're in
gosh, she's a moron.
Those ridiculous statements they underscore the problem with fighting against this. And you got an individual like a Ginger Jensen who goes so far over to one side and gets so ridiculous with statements like that, right? That when you pull it back to just a statement to try to defend it sort of even on a rational level, if that's possible, it makes that more readily acceptable. I mean, that's the power, at least in my opinion, that's the power that the Ginger Jensens hold, is that they push it so far and get so ridiculous in their commentary that when you pull back and you try to argue it just from a, well, it'll go and help workers, you know, and it'll be better for them and living wage, then it makes those types of ideas more readily acceptable in the minds of, well, at least not in the minds of voters in this case, but certainly in the minds of city council members. She went on to say, Minneapolis workers will not only continue to fight and defend the $15 minimum wage, but will mobilize to win greater gains based on the confidence of building a movement that they won. So $100 an hour minimum wage just around the corner. Fight for 50.
This idea that the Minneapolis workers won something here. No, when you go and lobby government to make other people do things at no personal sacrifice to yourself and at no personal sacrifice to the people that are actually making the decision. Oh, the only people that are being asked to sacrifice are the ones that this decision is being imposed upon. That's not a win.
No. No, it's not a win.
Yeah.
And the really, really unfortunate thing with this is that we both know, and you listening, you know, we know what the results of this is going to be. We know what's coming with this. It's not going to be a vibrant economy in Minneapolis. It's not going to be a benefit to the workers. We know that the automation is going to come. The businesses are going to leave.
Less jobs.
Fewer jobs. That's what is so disheartening, is that there is no, because we haven't seen it. All the data from the places around the country that have gone and done this has been overwhelmingly negative. I haven't seen a single positive news story to come out of any municipality that has passed a $15 minimum wage. Nope. Not a one. And that's the sad part, is that we're going to have to see it play out, right, and it's going
to
be ugly.
And to see people like Ginger Jensen and these other, the people that are on the city council run around taking credit for this and acting like they earned this. No. It's just disgusting. You're forcing all these businesses to make sacrifices, to cut jobs, to cut revenues, to cut expenses in order to pay for this thing that you want them to do, and you're going around and taking all the credit when they're the ones that are making all the sacrifice.
And it's so pathetic, because they don't realize that if they have taken all the energy and the time that they spend in doing this nonsense and actually did, you know, like a career, they probably would be really successful. Mm-hmm. They probably would have a really successful career in something beyond this particular career that they have that they've chosen.
Let's go to Patty in Forest Lake. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning, gentlemen. How have you been? Long time no talk to.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, listen, here's my comment. Is all these public servants that are Democrats that jump up and down and yell and scream about big businesses and so on and so forth are the same ones who rely on big business to pay their eventual pension. It's so crazy to me that they don't understand that the very people that they are attacking are going to pay the pensions for them eventually. Isn't that ironic?
Right? Yeah.
You know, when I worked in the jail years ago, I used to try to explain this how this all works, and it just was like looking at somebody who did. I mean, their eyes would be like a cuckoo clock going back and forth. It's like, okay, well, I don't understand this, how this works. You're idiots. The very people that you're chasing out of the state are the very people that are going to cover your lousy pension eventually, you idiots.
It's all right. They'll just tax more.
Yeah,
you know, it's fine. They don't care.
That are left.
They don't care.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah. And they'll tax. You guys, they'll tax the people that are left here who are complaining about big business. It's just this incredible. You know, recently I heard with the tax cuts and so on and so forth, and Schumer jumping up and down and yelling, and somebody made a comment that Democrats don't really want the economy to flourish. And going back and looking back over the last too many years I've been alive, I've come to the conclusion that that's true. They would just as soon have a surf class.
Thanks for your call, Patty. Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, you look at Ginger Jensen. I mean, look at the rhetoric that she employed. She ran her entire campaign on tax the rich, and she got more first choice votes in the ranked choice voting than her opponent who did end up going on to win.
Yeah, she's a frightening Pied Piper.
And I think she and the success of her campaign is indicative of the trend that Minneapolis is going.
Yeah, and it's
unfortunate and scary.
It is scary. And it's sad that you could be doing actual real good work for people, but you're not. You're duping individuals. Mm-hmm. You're duping individuals to allow the government to go and support your mediocre lifestyle. All right, coming up, the American Society of Clinical Oncology has just handed the nanny state a new argument that booze causes cancer.
Justice in.
Join us in supporting the Minnesota Military Family Foundation and grants for families during times of hardship. When we help one soldier, we help all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. Find out what you can do now at MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Good job, Sam. Twin Cities News Talk. Justice and Drew. Hey, Drew.
Hey, John.
You know the great thing about modern epidemiology?
I mean, there's more than one
cool
great thing.
Is that you can find multiple studies to
so many things
to justify great about any public health policy you happen to favor.
I would have a very difficult time choosing just the one great thing.
Story out of Reason. If you have a bias, there is plenty of confirming evidence of modern epidemiology from which to cherry pick. Okay. Now comes the American Society of Clinical Oncology. I really act like I know what I'm talking about.
I know, I was going to say, I really like it when you read a sentence and it's clear that you're not sure what you just read.
No, yeah, I know what I read. I know what I read. I do. Kind of.
I know some of those words.
Yeah, yeah. What I know here is the American Society of Clinical Oncology has made a statement about alcohol and cancer.
Okay.
The ASCO cites research estimating that 3.5 of all cancer deaths. So 3.5 of all cancer deaths are attributable to drinking alcohol in the United States.
That's a very small percentage.
That would mean
3.5% of all cancer deaths attributable to drinking alcohol. That's a really, really small percentage.
So that means you've got 21,000 of the 596,000 Americans who died of cancer in 2016 were killed by cancers associated with alcohol consumption. So in comparison, smoking tobacco is estimated to cause 32% of all cancer deaths, about 120 deaths.
Okay, 21,000 people,
right,
can attribute some portion of their cancer to drinking alcohol.
Right. If you just take the data at face value.
If you take the data at face value, but what percentage is 21,000 people of the number of people who consume alcohol on a regular basis? Not binge drinking, not excessive drinking, but just consume some alcohol. 21,000 people, that's probably less than 3.5%.
Yeah, I don't know. Modern epidemiology has not provided me with that information.
That's not one of the great things about modern epidemiology.
The ASCO treats consuming alcohol as a pure public health problem to which the only solutions are various forms of prohibition. They recommend regulating alcohol outlet density, increasing alcohol taxes and prices, maintaining limits on days and hours of sale, enhancing enforcement of laws prohibiting sales to minors, restricting youth exposure to advertising of alcoholic beverages, and resisting further privatization of retail alcohol sales in communities with current government control.
Prohibition has been so very successful. It's got such a great track record.
I
can see why they would want to double down on it.
What does it benefit the American Society of Clinical Oncology? What's the circular?
Yeah, where's the angle?
Yeah, what's the circular nature of this? Like, I get the American Society of Clinical Oncology putting out the information, right? I get that, but to then go and suggest that these are the ways to combat it. I mean, what does it benefit? There's a better way to say it. What does it benefit the ASCO to play into the nanny state mentality? That's what I don't understand.
Maybe they really just genuinely believe that's the best way. That's the best way to try to mitigate and minimize the amount of people that are consuming alcohol.
Now,
maybe they really believe that that is better than than going on an education campaign, than teaching people about these risks and dangers. They don't have much faith in the American people and the American public to react to information, to react to education efforts. No, it's got to be government prohibition.
Now, thankfully, because of the fine folks over at Reason do a good job, they point out that the ASCO tells only part of the story of the health effects related to drinking beer, wine, and spirits. There appear to be plenty of studies that find hard drinking increases the individual's risk of cancer, but the devil is in the cherry picking. Lots of research finds light to moderate drinking involves a trade-off between a slightly higher risk of cancer and a significantly lower risk of cardiovascular disease. Of course, the folks at the ASCO are aware of the issue. In an attempt to deal with it, the ASCO cites a line of research that argues this. Doing that thing with my fingers, the benefit of alcohol consumption on cardiovascular health likely has been overstated.
Right, but you're not overstating the risk.
No, of course not.
No. Not at all.
No. All right. Claims for the cardiovascular benefits of moderate alcohol consumption remain somewhat controversial. To some extent, there is a trade-off between the reduced cardiovascular risks and higher cancer risks. There are other trade-offs not considered, however, by the ASCO authors. For example, in a new study using 13 years of wage and drinking data from 1997, cohort of the National Longitudinal Survey of Youth finds that drinkers tend to attain more education and earn more than do abstainers. Hey, well, that's nice to know. Researchers found that by the end of the 13-year period, wages of drinkers were on average 40% higher than those of abstainers.
Hmm.
In addition, the researchers found that binge drinkers on average earned more than non-binge drinkers. Yay! Way to go, weekend warriors. They speculate that binge drinkers spend less overall time drinking and therefore are a bit more productive than folks who tipple on a regular basis. And therein lies the problem when you have an organization like this that comes out with a, it's one thing, and that's kind of what this article drives at, is that, look, it's one thing for the ASCO to come out with relevant data about the risks of cancer and to put out the percentages. That's fine. But what they shouldn't be doing is exactly what we're saying. They shouldn't be going and offering up, hey, here's some ideas on policy
right. That
can go and combat that.
Right.
Just stick to the facts.
Yeah.
Just stick to the data.
Yeah. Use your platform and use this research to educate people. That's it. And there. Hey, here's some things we think you should know. Don't take that extra step of saying, and here's things we want the government to do to restrict your behavior. Give me that information. Trust me that I'll make informed choices with that information.
And with more specificity out of reason, the statement that the ASCO makes doesn't recognize the health or income trade-off that folks who choose to drink may want to make. Even more importantly, the ASCO researchers fail to acknowledge that some people are willing to make the trade-off between the pleasures of imbibing beer, wine, and spirits and the possible health consequences.
Right. It's the trade-off. It's the decision made almost every time you sit down to a meal. Are you going to choose the thing that tastes good and may not be as good for you, or are you going to eat a little healthier and sacrifice the pleasure of flavor a little bit? You know, it's the same choices everybody makes. I'm willing to take the risk of a possible health consequence to consume the thing that I will enjoy the most.
Yeah, it's a gamble.
Yeah.
It's a gamble, and you should be allowed to make that gamble.
Right. And life is supposed to be fun and pleasurable, and you know, it's like you can't go through life denying yourself every single pleasure because there might be a health risk associated with it. Nobody wants to live like that. Joe in Minneapolis, go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Say, it would really be nice when these kinds of announcements come out that are there and designed to protect us from ourselves. If the people that come up with these kinds of conclusions could actually be identified rather than I'm getting to hide behind the name of some organization, because it isn't just an organization. It's actually somebody making these kinds of thoughts and decisions, having these kinds of thoughts and making these kinds of decisions. And I think it's wrong. And, you know, we also heard the arguments, which may be equally as valid, is that alcohol is actually beneficial to us every day. But when they come out with these kind of scare tactics and it's on behalf of the government, I think we should have some transparency.
Absolutely. Yep. The Reason article goes on and wraps it up by saying the author's role should be limited to informing us of the risks of boozing and then let us make our own decisions with respect to the trade-offs involved.
Yeah.
It's not that complicated.
No.
You present us with the information and let us do what we want with it.
I like at the end it says, disclosure. On occasion, I have been known to consume more than 5 alcoholic beverages in one sitting.
Whoa. Whoa.
Hey, now. Settle down. Ran out of Zima this weekend. Well, I timed it. I didn't run out. Well, I guess I ran out, but I intentionally timed it because there was the date was November, and I figured I'd give myself a little past the November expiration date, so I finished off my last two Zimas over the weekend. Yeah.
Did you cry?
No, because I believe it's coming back
next
year.
Don't lie to us.
No, I didn't. I would again. Once again, why? When have I ever? Not admitted to something like that.
Indications are they are going to make this a yearly thing.
Yeah.
A limited release every summer. That makes sense. I think it's smart.
Melinda asked if it got stronger if I waited. She's like, will it intensify in its alcoholness if you wait? And I said, I'm not really willing to take that risk.
And no.
Yeah, and probably not.
Kevin on Twitter using the hashtag TCNT says, I know a lot more old drinkers than I do epidemiology. Who's or what's it's? It's true. Every time you see one of those stories about, you know, somebody celebrating their 100th birthday, they're almost always accompanied with, and she drinks a glass of whiskey a day.
Yeah.
When you smoke cigars.
When you begin to take into account all of the variables that go into one's life expectancy.
Right.
It's why my card, it's like.
It's random.
Yeah.
There's so much randomness involved.
When I asked my cardiologist, you know, my life expectancy based off of my heart valve and my graft, he's like, well, you know, for all intents and purposes, you should live a long and normal, healthy life.
Right.
But that may not happen for things well beyond your heart right. valve and your graft.
I'd like to see one of these, you know, one of these octogenarians that they interview. Oh, you're celebrating your 100th birthday. What's the secret to a long life? Avoid getting hit by a bus.
Yeah.
That's, I wake up every day and I say, I'm not going to get hit by a bus today.
By that bus.
And so far, I'm still alive.
Or in the path of Sam's car.
Avoid Sam and lightning. Try not to get struck by lightning.
I feel like it's more likely to get struck by I was about to say something dumb. Never mind. Never mind. Go ahead.
Excellent contribution.
You're welcome. Compelling. I'm a radio professional.
Compelling and rich.
I was going to make a joke about how it's more likely to get hit by my car. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It wasn't funny.
No, more to explain it one more time.
More likely to get hit by your car than it would be to be hit by lightning.
Which, I mean, obviously. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Just enough time for this. Out of the out of the Washington Post. They're the best. Out of the Washington Post.
There's lightning, there's cars.
Despite the film industry's depiction of psychopaths, classical music is not their go-to soundtrack in the real world. First off, is that the go-to in movies of psychopaths, well, is classical music?
It's that trope of the serial killer genius.
Okay.
Which doesn't exist in real life.
No.
But it's a very popular movie trope of the serial killer in a movie, you know, having a very, very high IQ and having refined tastes and listening to classical music and
gotcha.
Eating gourmet food. You know, it's like that I don't think that's ever existed, but it's a great movie character.
Pascal Wallisch, a psychology professor at New York University's filmmaker, said this. In the movies, if you want to establish in one shot that a monster has a human side, right? He says that that's why the filmmakers play a certain kind of music. There's Beethoven, right? A Clockwork Orange. Mozart in Silence of the Lambs. So there's your examples. Yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah, right. I guess Hannibal had Mozart playing in the background.
Served it with a fine Chianti.
Wallisch and Nicole Leal, graduate of NYU, wanted to find out if a preference for certain music genres is correlated with psychopathy, a personality disorder characterized by manipulativeness, caught Sam's disease, and a lack of empathy. The researchers gave a questionnaire to more than 190 NYU psychology students that rated their level of psychopathy. All right. So they went and they had a wide range of songs from classical to recent Billboard Hot 100 tunes and rated them on a 7-point scale. Most of the songs were unfamiliar to the students. The researchers looked for correlations between preferences for certain songs and the students' scores on the psychopathy scale. Are you following me so far? They identified 20 songs that seemed to be particularly popular or unpopular depending on the listener's level of psychopathy. Would you like to know what some of those songs are?
I think there's a lot of benefit to knowing what those are, yes.
All right, among the songs with the highest correlation were, I'll tell you what, let's have some fun. I'll give you the artist, see if you can pick the song. Okay, you ready?
Oh boy.
There was an Eminem tune. You pick an Eminem song that would have been chosen?
Would it be Lose Yourself?
You're a psychopath.
Wow. Wow, that's not my favorite Eminem.
Oh, a psychic. I'm sorry. That's what I was going for. Okay, here we go. Blackstreet. Anybody? No, Blackstreet? No, it's true. Sam, Blackstreet?
No idea.
No,
I'm afraid to talk now.
No Diggity. No Diggity was identified.
I love that song.
It makes a lot of sense as well.
No Diggity, no doubt.
No Diggity, No Diggity, by the way.
It's so good. Okay, but in my defense, I only love it because of Pitch Perfect.
Well, that also could be a sign, too.
Yeah.
It could be.
Yeah, we're talking about, you know.
I'm beginning to think that deer was not hit by accident.
Hey, do you guys know? You're not going to know, but I'll just go ahead and phrase it this way anyways. Do you guys know the distinction that Blackstreet's No Diggity carries? It ousted Macarena for the Billboard's top spot in 1996. So Macarena had held it for several weeks until No Diggity went and took it off the top spot.
Macarena, what? Is that the song that everybody dances to?
Yeah. The Macarena.
Oh.
Justin Bieber's What Do You Mean was also a popular one with students who scored high on the psychopathy scale. I don't even know that song.
Yeah, don't. It's not worth checking out.
Here we go, Drew. On the low end, okay, Dire Straits.
Sultans of Swing?
No, Money for Nothing.
Okay, well, it's going to be one of those two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Knack's 1979 popular hit, My Sharona.
Now,
there's no correlation between any of this.
Yeah, by the way, the researchers actually said they hadn't found a pattern.
John, you should check out that What Do You Mean song by Justin Bieber, because I feel like that's like the perfect song for that list. Because it's a song all about him asking, like, what do you mean? Like when you nod your head yes, but you really mean no.
Gotcha. All right.
Perfect psychopath song. I don't want nobody.
Pete Hegseth on the show tomorrow.
I'm glad you said something because I didn't know.
Representative Jason Lewis.
Awesome. Have a great time Monday, guys. Thanks for hanging out.
This traffic update is